Well, the only person is my boyfriend. His name is Ray.
Ray?
Mm-hmm.
And when is the last time you had sex with Ray?
Last night.
Would you believe that Catherine the Great of Russia actually screened her lovers through a committee of six women? You guys can think about that for a while. To protect herself from these bacterial spirals, which cause one of history's deadliest and most detested plagues.
I've never had anything like this before in my life.
You've never had syphilis or gonorrhea before?
Oh, goodness, no.
It was called by the Germans the Polish disease. The Spanish thought it was the Portuguese disease. The French called it the Italian disease. And the Italians, along with almost everybody else, called it the French disease.
You only contact the infection through sexual contact. That is, any way that you can have sex, whether it's vaginal, oral, or rectal.
That way?
It's still the silent epidemic. No one likes to talk about gonorrhea and syphilis and a lot of other things like chancroid, but our number one communicable disease is caused by the love bugs.
Oh, goodness, no.
Last year, over 1 million cases of gonorrhea were reported in the United States, and it's estimated that only one-third or one-fourth of the actual gonorrhea cases are reported, so the total is really more like 3 to 4 million. Over 25,000 new cases of infectious syphilis were reported last year, and it's estimated that 500,000 Americans have the disease and don't even know about it. Venereal disease is our number one communicable disease problem, right behind common colds and flus. And it's ironic, in a sense, for a society that likes to consider itself open and unembarrassed to confront formerly taboo subjects like sex. They can go to the X, triple X, whatever they are, R, and all the other rated movies. Sex is in every magazine and bookstore, supermarket, everywhere. I mean, little kids can go out and buy stuff that just would have absolutely bombed your mind a few years ago. And yet, to this day, as liberated as everyone is, they still don't want to talk openly with each other or with their children about gonorrhea and syphilis. Equally ironic, and at first approximation a little puzzling, is that with the advent of penicillin, many thought the ravages of venereal disease would be relegated to the annals of medical history. Penicillin, after all, proved to be a very safe and highly effective cure for both diseases. It's still a preferred treatment today, although other antibiotics are now available for those who have adverse reactions to penicillin, and many do. Furthermore, treatment is available not only through private physicians, but can be had free at these public health clinics that can be discovered by looking them up in the Yellow Pages. Still, in our antibiotic age, we're confronted with a venereal disease epidemic, and in this program, we're going to take a look at some of the reasons why.
Okay, tell me, please, about the very last person you had contact with.
Okay, well, like I said, it was a couple of days ago, I guess, and this chick I'm in this bar, I go in sometime.
Okay, what's her name, please?
Her name is Priscilla.
Priscilla?
Right.
Okay. Yes. Do you know Priscilla's last name? Did she give it to you?
No, I don't know. She comes in there a lot, so
okay.
I'll probably even ask around.
Even after penicillin was in hand and being used, there remained a problem of seriously underestimated proportions, that of finding all of those who were infected with either syphilis or gonorrhea but didn't know it. In the United States, physicians must, by law, report all known cases of gonorrhea and syphilis to public health authorities. Public health departments, in turn, in the United States and other nations, employ specialists called case finders, whose delicate job it is to locate those who may be unknowingly infected.
If we begin to interview one person, and this patient tells us of two others who need treatment, okay, one of them, it turns out, has the disease, and the other does not. Well, we will not continue with the individual who does not have the disease, but the process begins again with the person or the sex contact who is infected.
Did Priscilla by any chance indicate where she lived? Or did you by any chance take her to her home or anything of that nature?
No, we went back over to my place. So, okay. You know, I don't have no idea. She left, she was gone the next morning.
But you said something that's very interesting to me. She stays, frequents the nail, or she goes to the nail.
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah. That's important. There's somebody there, they know.
It is not uncommon for us to locate an individual who, whose first name is just about the only thing we know, or that they work, or, visit a given location, whether it be a bar or whatever.
I'll speak to the bartender and see if I can identify Priscilla, and we'll make sure that she's treated. Okay.
You will keep my name out of it, though?
Absolutely. Okay, absolutely. Your name will not be mentioned. Just let me tie this one up.
I would say that the question of confidentiality is more often the one item that is on the mind of the people we deal with. We explain to them, however, first of all, that they are protected by law. Not only medical records, as you know, are protected legally, but when it comes to communicable diseases, and VD and specifically, there are special safeguards.
Everything that you say to me is completely confidential. All I'll do is simply call him up or go by his job or call him at his job or come by his house and leave him a note and ask him to call me.
Oh, no, you can't go by his job. That would be awful if you did that.
Well, fine. Whatever way you think is best for us to get in touch with him, I'll be willing to do that.
We cannot, for example, any of our workers at any time divulge any of the names from, you know, one person we deal with to another. When we contact them, we don't identify ourselves in front of others or to anyone until we know exactly we're talking to the one we want to talk to. And records, for example, that we may keep when they are of no use to us, you know, when the case is closed, those are shredded and burned.
Well, there has been someone else, but that's a real problem.
What's the problem?
Well, lots of them.
Okay.
One thing I don't want Ray to know, does anybody else, does he have to know?
No, as I said, it's completely confidential.
A marital situation may cause us to work a little bit hard. However, that is approached the same as any other situation. That is, the strictest confidentiality is maintained. No husband or wife ever knows from us what's happening with the other.
There's one other person. I'll tell you that.
Okay, I'd like
one
to
other
know
person,
this person's
but I,
name.
I don't want to give you their name. I want to talk to them myself.
Okay. Understand this, David. Your intentions may be wonderful, may be very honorable, but this person may not understand, may not care, may not...
Well, this person I know very well. In fact, okay, I'll tell you, it's my roommate. It's a guy that I live with, and
right.
We have sex fairly often.
All right.
But it's been, you know, like 10 days or so since the last time we had sex.
Okay.
But it wouldn't work too well, I don't think, for you to go knocking on
you
the
don't.
Door. I think that I need to talk to him. I'll tell him myself. I'll bring him down to the clinic with me in the morning. We'll come down together.
I think it's traditionally accepted as a good generality that homosexual patients will have a greater variety of different sex partners than a heterosexual patient. Some of them are bisexual. Now, when you have more different sex partners over over a given period of time, the likelihood of our being able to locate all of those people becomes diminished, especially when there may be involved a good deal of anonymous sex contact.
I've never had anything like this before in my life.
You've never had syphilis or gonorrhea before?
Oh, goodness, no.
I know a lot of people don't like to discuss a subject like venereal disease, but how can you ignore a national epidemic? Most kids today think you can play around and get away with it. If a girl feels something is wrong, she can go to a doctor. Nobody needs to know and nobody gets hurt. But the main thing about this advice is it's wrong and it's dangerous. A lot of girls and guys don't even know they have VD until the damage is already done. And it's permanent. We don't need any more childish misinformation. I know two...
Venereal disease concerns everyone.
Right now I know three or four girls who have VD. And they're ruining their lives. They're
now you can have the facts about the silent epidemic. To request your free copy, dial direct 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
The silent epidemic is getting louder.
If you'll pick up the telephone and dial that toll-free number, 800-423-4444, we'll send you this free brochure on the silent epidemic. An awful lot of people are carrying the disease that don't know about it, especially young people where it is so absolutely epidemic. Maybe you need to know what some of the symptoms are and what you might be doing about it to save yourself and or your children. It's free of charge. If you live in California, Alaska, or Hawaii, the number is area 213-577-5225. Venereal disease is called the silent epidemic, partially because it's the nature of the disease to remain hidden or silent, for very few people to know that they have it. Perhaps more than anything else, it's this silence that not only gives the diseases their destructive potential, but also renders the epidemic so difficult for authorities to control. For example, early symptoms of gonorrhea, which occur from a few days to a few weeks after exposure, including a discharge from the penis or vagina and pain upon urination. But the vast majority of women who contract gonorrhea are asymptomatic. They either have no such early symptoms or they're so slight as to be unnoticed. Likewise, it was once assumed that all men exhibited early symptoms, but it's now known that perhaps as many as 20% are also asymptomatic. Gonorrhea also may not exhibit symptoms if contracted in the throat or the rectum, and what this means is that if a person is infected for several months, he may be transmitting it to others and not even aware of the disease presence. The asymptomatic carrier also has no warning that the disease is progressing to dangerous proportions in his or her body. Though gonorrhea is seldom fatal, untreated cases eventually lead to advanced painful inflammations in the genital and pelvic region, which may do permanent damage. Gonorrhea is the leading disease-related cause of sterility in women today. In addition, it may lead to dangerous tubal pregnancies, partial blockage of the urinary tract, a form of arthritis, and infections of the eyes, skin, or even the ears. With syphilis, there is a similar problem of silence. The first clinical sign of syphilis is the development of an open sore called a chancre, appearing 10 to 90 days after infection, at the point where the syphilis spirochetes entered the body. However, the chancre is usually painless, so if it's located where it can't easily be found or discovered, inside the rectum, the mouth, or even internal female genitalia, it might not be noticed. Even if it's untreated, the chancre will usually disappear within 6 weeks or less, to be followed a few weeks or months later by the symptoms of secondary syphilis, rash-like lesions that may erupt anywhere on the surface of the body. You may have a rash that doesn't even itch and wonder where it came from and how to get rid of it. These symptoms are also often ignored or misinterpreted because the rash may not appear to be serious. In some cases, it may not even really be visible. And in any event, it too disappears after a few weeks, seemingly goes away by itself. But syphilis is infectious during these primary and secondary stages, so when not detected, it continues to be spread by sexual or intimate contact. After a person has had syphilis for a year, it's usually no longer contagious. The disease enters a period of latency and may never again become active. On the other hand, a few years later, it may be reactivated as late as tertiary syphilis, which is a potentially lethal stage in which destructive lesions may attack any part of the body. Cardiovascular syphilis, for example, may lead to death through destruction of the aorta and heart failure. Neurosyphilis may lead to blindness, paralysis, or a dramatic and hopeless form of insanity that once filled mental institutions. Antibiotics can arrest the progress of syphilis or gonorrhea at any time, but once serious physiological damage has been done, that damage usually cannot be reversed. In recent decades in the developed world, syphilis has taken its most tragic toll in the form of congenital syphilis. After about the 18th week of pregnancy, the syphilis spirochete can cross the placenta from an infected woman to her unborn child. It doesn't necessarily matter what stage the disease in the mother's body might be in. The result of the congenital infection may be stillbirth, or the child may suffer potentially devastating defects similar to those that may afflict adults with late syphilis. Syphilis has caused 4 million deaths in the United States since 1900. 3 million of them were congenital syphilitics infected with the love bug from the time of the womb.
Mr. Jodar, based on your experience in the field, do you feel it's ever possible to bring gonorrhea and syphilis under control with our present approach to the problem?
The most interesting word there is control. I would say this, that if we're not having any more disease this year than last year, then you might argue that it's being controlled. But the question is, how much disease is acceptable? What is the tolerated level? Let's just talk about gonorrhea for the moment. Last year, we made an attempt to interview some 28,000 males with gonorrhea. we were only able to get to 14,000 of those, roughly. The reason for that is that we don't have enough people. Let's assume that you're a man with a family where you have your mother, two children, and a wife, and a dog living with you. Your mother has tuberculosis. Your wife has venereal disease. Your dog has been biting everybody and probably has rabies. But you are only able to solve two of those problems. Take a choice. That's the problem that we have.
A very famous book written a few years ago in the spirit of the so-called sexual revolution summarized the attitude many people have today toward VD. You have, the book said, and I quote, the good luck to be having a sex life at a time when medical science is able to knock out venereal disease in rapid order. If you do get a sore or a discharge, the book advised, or the feeling that something is wrong, run to your gynecologist and get fixed up. Unfortunately, though, this penicillin mentality has no justification in medical fact. First of all, both gonorrhea and syphilis are quite capable of progressing to serious proportions without providing the advance warning one needs to, as the book said, run to the gynecologist to get fixed up. There are many other afflictions called sexually transmitted diseases, which are usually, though not so exclusively, transmitted by sexual contact. And some of these, in particular several virus infections, can be very dangerous. And despite the glowing report of the author I quoted a few moments ago, medical science is not able to knock them out in rapid order. Genital herpes, for example, is a virus affliction closely related to cold sores. It results in small, extremely painful lesions in the genital area, and like cold sores, the lesions recur over and over in some individuals.
We do not have an effective treatment agent, agent for herpes. We treat symptomatically, and for some persons, they can be made quite comfortable. Others, it's very difficult to give them relief during the active stages of the infection.
Herpes infection is under strong suspicion as a contributing factor in cervical cancer. In addition, about 1,000 babies die every year from herpes infection acquired at birth from their mothers. And meanwhile, another sexually transmitted viral infection called cytomegalovirus has only recently been found to be responsible for a sizable percentage of serious infant cerebral palsy. As with herpes, medical science has no good cure for that big word called cytomegalovirus. Also of concern is the steadily increasing resistance that gonorrhea itself has shown to penicillin over the years. 25 years ago, they said that 10,000 units of penicillin were used to treat the average gonorrhea case. Today, it takes 4 million units. In addition, a new strain of gonococcus has emerged from Southeast Asia, probably directly resulting from the Vietnamese War, that cannot be cured by penicillin at all in any amount. Fortunately, this super love bug is susceptible to other antibiotics, but it serves to illustrate that gonorrhea can be a complex and dangerously resilient disease.
I've never had anything like this before in my life.
You've never had syphilis or gonorrhea before?
Oh, goodness, no.
The mighty Roman Empire had everything. Plenty of leisure time. Their own new morality. Enormous military might. The religion of their choice. Political freedom. What went wrong? Read The Modern Romans, a 93-page lesson of history ignored. Call this toll-free number. 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. The Modern Romans asks, can we afford the grandeur of Rome?
Let me send you this free booklet, The Modern Romans, The Decline of Western Civilization, that actually superposes on top of our society today the very internal factors that brought ancient Rome down. You won't believe this, but they had their VD epidemic too. 800-423-4444 in California, Alaska, and Hawaii area, 213-577-5225. Well, for years, even in this century, many newspapers wouldn't print the word syphilis or gonorrhea. And in many households, they're still good for a round of blushes if anybody talks about them. Some people find that they don't quite turn so crimson if they call them social diseases. That's a way of being polite about it. While others wouldn't discuss the problem with a 10-foot euphemism.
Well, I caught the disease when I was 17 years old. And at the time, that was back in 67, and to acknowledge that you had something wrong with you would be acknowledging that you were having sexual relationships, and that was something that you did not do.
I don't know if it does me much good or anyone else to say, parents, sit down and talk with your kids about VD. Because what is really needed is for parents to, over the years, establishing an ongoing dialogue with their children about all aspects of sex and sexuality in the climate of openness, wholesomeness in the home. And that certainly would include venereal and sexually transmitted diseases.
Well, my family, they were very upset because, again, that acknowledged that I was sexually active and sex was something that was not to be indulged in until you were married and so on, so they were very disappointed in me. But strangely enough, they were disappointed also that I did not come to them and tell them that I had a problem earlier. They felt that we had a more open line of communication. And the main reason that I did not tell them that I had a problem was because basically I did not want them to be disappointed in me, you know, and I did not want them to disapprove of my actions and so on. I was afraid. You know, I felt that they would not love me anymore, that they would have less respect for me.
A lot of people will say it's not fair to blame our modern lifestyle because, as I mentioned earlier, VD has been a widespread scourge for centuries. But that just goes to show that down through the centuries, the lip service paid to traditional or Christian mores has often been just that, lip service. On the other hand, I imagine a number of people would be absolutely aghast that old Garner Ted is sitting here talking about such a nasty subject and mentioning words like, you know, parts of the human body. If you want to talk about a thing like that, they'll say, just call it sin and then away with it. Don't mention it anymore. Just label it as sins. Everybody will avoid it. Well, I would hesitate to sit smugly back and simply say VD is sin, down with VD, when there is so much that can be done to help people by educating people all about VD and how it is transmitted, what its symptoms are, how you can get rid of it, and how to avoid it is the first thing. Because along with the threat of disease, unwanted pregnancy, and all these other things, if that is the only rationale behind the sex laws of the Bible, I'm doing a disservice to people. That is not the rationale. The rationale behind the Ten Commandments is not all negative. It's all positive. For every don't, there is a very positive do. And for don't catch VD is do retain a strong family unit and experience the kind of thrills and joys inside the family unit that God Almighty designed. The truth remains you can best protect yourself from VD and sexually transmitted diseases through abiding by the laws of God revealed in the Bible that govern sexual conduct. There are those who claim they don't have any moral hang-ups, and for them, VD is often a taboo subject. People don't want to talk about it because it doesn't seem consistent with the sexual and romantic fantasies they've been led to believe in and to wallow in motion pictures and entertainment and the printed media today. But after all, when you think about all this libertine expose stuff in theater going and so on, where do you ever see a couple who meet in the night in this movie, head for this place in their car, and on the way exchange disease histories? Now, as chic as we are, we're not quite that chic today.
What about your sexual partner at that time? Did he know that he had venereal disease, had gonorrhea?
He knew that he had it, but he had thought that there was enough time spacing that perhaps he had not given it to me. He had hoped that it was something that would just go away. Once he had received treatment, he felt that if I was not showing symptoms or anything like that, that there was any reason for him to mention it to me. He was afraid that our relationship would be destroyed, which it did destroy our relationship, because after I had the extreme symptoms and I found out what was wrong with me, I was very, very upset with him. I think that there's a problem with before and after communication, that because people are caught up in the passion of the moment, that they will feel somewhat awkward with saying, well, hey, you know, what is your disease history? You know, people feel very awkward about confronting each other beforehand. And then I think that a problem is also that people even afterwards will not go back. As I say, men will not go back and say, well, you know, I have something wrong with me. Maybe you should go in and be checked.
A message to people has to be that sexual activity with multiple sex partners increases immensely the risk of acquiring one of the sexually, one or more, in fact, of the sexually transmitted diseases. If infection is acquired or is suspected, then the person should seek examination immediately.
I think we can safely say that with syphilis and gonorrhea, we're not about to eradicate the disease with current control measures, because there is so much socially involved. The whole behavior of our society, you know, we could talk about that for hours. What we need then is a vaccine. After all, any disease we've ever gotten rid of, we've vaccinated it away.
I think that also that if the emphasis are free sex, that it should be free sex with responsibility, being responsible for your act, responsible not only in terms of ED, but also in terms of birth control.
In the meantime, we're doing the best we can with what's available, and of course, we're looking over our backs that we no longer, you know, just talk about VD, gonorrhea and syphilis. We are now worried about the other sexually transmitted diseases, and there's just a whole bunch of them.
To ask medical science or the political process to control the VD epidemic is at this time to ask an awful lot of them. What we need is an increased sense of responsibility for our own health and those of our children, and at least the courage to communicate when not to do so means jeopardizing the health of others, and that includes parents communicating with their own children. But effective communication can never take place until people know what they're talking about and take it upon themselves to be informed about the nature of venereal diseases and other sexually transmitted diseases as well. If you really want to be informed, then you need to pick up the telephone and dial that toll-free number we showed you for this article on VD, the silent epidemic, and this booklet that shows you that just like ancient Rome had many reasons, internal as well as external, for its ultimate collapse. So, the United States of America is on a downward trend, and the handwriting is on the wall of the United States today. 800-423-4444, or in California, Alaska, and Hawaii, it's area 213-577-5225. Until next time, let me remind you, there was never a girl who ever came home and said, Mom, I've got half a case of gonorrhea.
For the free literature offered on this program, write Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. In Canada, Box 44, Vancouver, BC. Or in the continental United States, you may call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. In California, dial direct, 213-577-5225. All literature is free upon request.